Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips. It is me, your boy, Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host, Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy?
I'm doing swell. How about yourself?
I'm doing fabulous. A little exhausted. Did some yard work today. But, you know, we're here. And then after this, I get to eat. And, you know, I believe the fiance is going to let me just, like, chill out for the rest of the night, which is huge for me. That's
nice.
That's pretty fantastic. You know, yeah, all things considered, doing all right. Got a grill. That happened.
Oh my gosh. I tried grilling for the first time. Not like ever. Did I tell you this story already? Yeah, oh, I did. I texted you.
I'll tell the people.
Yeah, I'll tell the people about it. So what happened was I haven't grilled in a while, and Gina decided that we usually do Sunday dinner with her family, so everybody comes over. I know Tom is probably laughing in his car right now because he eats things blue rare, and these things were like not even close to that. So anyway, I was grilling, and I was like trying to get everything ready. So I walked inside for a second, and I went to grab something, and I came back out, and it was just like there was a flame inside the grill. And Gina goes, "Do you think that's overcooking them?" And I was like, I don't know. So I opened it and it was just on fire. And I was like, you didn't think to just like maybe check on this yourself when you saw fire in there? So I scrambled to save what I could. Didn't really end up saving anything. The burgers were aggressively overdone. And the hot dogs, some of the hot dogs were just black. It was bad.
I don't mind a blackened hot dog, though.
So the good news is
right.
The only place we can go from here is up. Mm-hmm.
There's only progress upwards.
Yeah, exactly. So the problem was the knobs. I had it on high because that's where you have to start it on. And then I forgot to put it down lower. So when I walked away, obviously that's when things went wrong. So, I mean, these are easy fixes. Not anything crazy, but yes, we almost burned the house down. Thankfully, earlier that day, Gina goes, "Is the grill far enough away from the house?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so." And she was like, "How far away is it supposed to be?" I was like, "I don't know." She looked it up and it said 10 feet. So I moved it away from the house, over to the farther side of our patio. So it could have been really bad if that conversation didn't happen earlier. Fortunately, the worst thing that happened was we just had some really shitty burgers and hot dogs. But I grilled up
Could've
some
gone
zucchini.
A lot worse.
I grilled up some zucchini to go with it. That turned out all right. We had pasta salad. We had all this other stuff. So it could have been worse. First time grilling at the new house, not a success. But again, only place we can go from here is up. So
I gotta say, the really good news is it was human error and not like the grills busted. So like
yeah, exactly.
Human error is free, baby. You can fix that, right? You know,
I'm
human error is free
That's
as far as I'm
is.
Concerned.
Also, now they won't ask to come over again for Sunday dinner, which is cool because then I won't have
which
to
is awesome. Exactly. That's perfect. Maybe you nailed it. I'm not gonna lie.
Like I was thinking about that. I was like,
you might have nailed it.
Now I'll never have to cook for a lot of people again. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Mowed my lawn for the first time.
Nice.
That was fun. That was a good time. Less than an hour to do both the front and the back.
Weed whacking
not too
too?
Shabby. No, because I was doing the first mow because I wanted to figure out, is it worth getting a full-blown weed whacker or is it something that I can live without, right? With the amount of up against the fence parts of my yard in the back, I had to get the weed whacker. So when we went to Lowe's, we got a grill and a weed whacker.
Oh, so, you guys.
Yeah, I know. We got a Charbroil.
Okay.
So it's a solid one. It's a little four burner action for you. With the the side stovetop.
Yeah, we got one of those on our grill too.
The good stuff. You can put some cheese over there. Let that cheese melt if you want to. You're doing stuff there. Next move on the grill is to get one of those attachments where it's the flat top.
Oh yeah, there you go,
dude. I mean, that's a registry item right there. That is going on the registry for the wedding.
You might want to get that before your registry. I'm going to be honest.
I mean, yeah, but like, if it could be free, that'd just be the bee's knees. You know
what
I'm saying?
That's fair.
Yeah. But in other news, and this is actually podcast related, folks. In other news, your boy Rick and your boy Brian were able to get a partnership with Shank It Golf at shankitgolf.com. They're an apparel store. They got hats, polos, a bunch of different products, t-shirts, hoodies. They got stuff for women, for men. They got ball markers. They got towels. They got head covers, stickers, etc. They got a bunch of really cool stuff on their website. A lot of stuff that you guys have probably seen online before, but just haven't visited their website. When you get those targeted ads on Instagram and Twitter, folks, this is probably where it's coming from. So check out shankitgolf.com. And when you go to check out, use code FTT15 at checkout to get 15% off your order. Not only are you getting 15% off, but you're also helping us, the podcast, to be able to bring you better content. Maybe get me a mic like Rick's. Who knows? But you go to shankitgolf.com, check out what they have. You're going to love it. I guarantee it. So when you go to check out, use FTT15. Again, that's FTT15 to get 15% off your order at shankitgolf.com. This is super cool because we haven't had like a full-blown ad read situation since we started, and we were doing the ad reads for Anchor, which we decided to stop doing because I don't think Spotify needs any more free advertising, to be totally honest with you. But this is super cool. We're 100 episodes in. We have a partner now. We're working on other ones. I'm putting our names out there for a bunch of different stuff. So hopefully some other ones coming too. Trying to see if we can monetize this bad boy. Get some monetary value up in here. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
The more money we make, the more content we can make. Better things that we get to share.
For sure. I mean, if we get enough money for like a drone, we will do it. Okay. Although we do know a guy with a drone, shout out to Colin. That might be coming this summer, so stay tuned for that too. But we have a partnership now, which is super cool. So you'll be hearing those ad reads before every episode. But in proper from the tips fashion, Rick, what happened today in sports history, my friend?
Oh, I got a good one for you.
Oh, I'm excited.
1978. This is going to be the most vague. This is going to be the most vague guess it I've ever given you. But guess what happened? So, again, we do the day the episode releases. So, it's technically April 25th, not April 24th.
Right.
So, do you know what happened relevant to Philadelphia sports? I'll give you that much. On April 25th, 1978.
In April of 1978.
It's a big one.
It's not going to be the Schmidt 500th homer because that was in the 80s. I don't think it was it the last time the Sixers won a championship? That might be. Flyers weren't, well, they just had been relevant. They aren't anymore at this point. The Phillies are the Phillies are 2 years removed from a World Series, which is cool. I'm going to say the Sixers won a championship.
I had a feeling that's the route you were going to go. It's actually not related to anything on the field whatsoever.
Damn it.
But what happened was we got who is now most sued, I believe, mascot of all time.
Hey!
The Philly Fanatic. The Philly
Fanatic? Yeah!
Yeah, made his first appearance on April 25th of 1978 or whatever I said. 1978, that's the one.
I do believe he is the most sued mascot there is.
He was at one point.
I find it hard to believe that somebody else is suing more mascots. I'm trying to see if there's like an amount.
Yeah.
I'm seeing just a bunch of different lawsuits. But yeah, definitely in Philadelphia fashion to have the most sued mascot out there. 1978. All right. The introduction of the Fennec. Have you perchance seen some of the mascots throughout Philly's history?
No.
In the late 1800s, I mean, the Phillies have been around since 1883, most losing franchise in all professional sports. Holla at them. there was this mascot that was like a Flying Dutchman and a rat. And it was the late 1800s, so you know it was fucking disturbing. It is arguably the most disturbing thing I have ever seen in my adult life. Let me see if I think I've sent this to somebody before, or somebody sent it to me, vice versa.
The late 1800s, I can imagine, is terrifying, because I just think back to opening day of Disney, the Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse costumes that they had, and how absolutely incredibly terrifying those things are.
Same amount of horrifying.
I can't imagine it's better. I mean,
if you get the chance, folks, go ahead and Google Philadelphia Phillies former mascots. It is disturbing. And also, let's not even talk about in the early 1900s when they decided to just become the Blue Jays for 2 years for no reason at all. And then dropped the name afterwards because they were like, this is not clearly catching on. Sports were madness back in the day. No one had a clue what was going on. Zero organization whatsoever. But also, these people weren't making millions and millions of dollars yet. So professional sports was pretty meh back in the day. You could probably make more money working at the mill. But anything else from today in sports history?
Yeah, I mean, so anyone who follows football like I do knows that the NFL draft is coming up starting on Thursday. Panthers have the first overall pick, which I still don't know how I feel about. But that means that we have, in the past, had other NFL drafts that have happened. So we have a few first round picks of note. Matthew Stafford in 2009 was picked by the Detroit Lions. And in 2019, Kyler Murray was picked number one overall by the Cardinals. So,
well, I'll be damned.
If I look 2 days ahead, there's probably a lot more, but I'm not going to, because that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about today. And that's what happened.
100%. All righty. Well, thanks for this history lesson here on From the Tips. We move forward into some golf talk, obviously being a golf podcast. Here we go. We had the Zurich Classic of New Orleans over the weekend. That is a team event. It's teams of two, which is super cool. The winners being Nick Hardy and Davis Riley, two guys who are actually pretty late additions to this event. Quoting from ESPN.com here. While some of the world's top players were gearing up for the Masters several weeks ago, Nick Hardy was texting his friend Davis Riley to see if he would be his playing partner at the Zurich Classic. According to Riley, he said, quote, "We were cracking up because this all kind of transpired kind of last minute. We didn't have a partner 3 weeks ago, so I'm really excited that it worked out the way it did." So either the 27-year-old Hardy and the 26-year-old Riley birdied four of their final six holes, highlighted by Riley's 33-foot birdie putt from the fringe on the 17th hole for a two-shot victory. I don't know if you've seen that putt. It was madness, because if he misses that, it's going 10 feet down that hill. Now, I haven't seen if like his partner putted before and they would have used his or whatever, and he was just going for it, but one hell of a putt from the fringe. And they ended up winning the tournament at a 30-under clip. Rick, could you imagine you and I going out and for 4 days shooting 30 under in those 4 days?
I can't imagine us doing that over the course of like a whole summer.
A calendar year. Yeah. You could give us maybe ever. Any amount of rounds.
I don't know if ever. Like,
if you do the math at this point of all of our rounds put together, we are so far above par, we're never going to get here, right? We would have to hit 18 hole-in-ones at some point just to even come close to this number. But 30 under to win the tournament. Adam Hadwin and Nick Taylor, Team Canada, basically coming in second at 28 under. Look, I like this tournament. I like it a lot. I think it's cool. I like the team camaraderie thing. We've talked about this before. These are the kind of events that we find cool. Here's the problem. It appears nobody really respects this tournament at all, right? Just because it is kind of right after the Masters, right? It's pretty much in a spot where a lot of your bigger players, your top 10, your top 20 guys probably aren't playing in this tournament, right? You know, Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele came back because they won it last year, and this is kind of their thing, team events and stuff like that. But it doesn't help when the sponsorship exemption goes 14 over par, misses the cut, and is 12 shots off of the next lowest. Now, sure, the sponsorship exemption was John Daly and you know, David Duval. So, you know, you got to see John Daly, which is kind of cool. But the 56-year-old and the 51-year-old combined for 14 over to miss the cut. So, Rick, we're kind of in a boat here where this is kind of a cool event because of what it is, right? But it appears like nobody really, you know, thought this one through to have a better sponsorship exemption that would have a better shot at competing. What, like, what's your opinion on that? Do you think this is kind of a smudge on the tournament? Like, people don't actually care or what?
Honestly, I don't know that many people really care. I don't know that many people have paid enough attention to realize even that that happened. I think it was a waste of a spot, though. I think there was plenty of Korn Ferry guys that they might have been able to give an exemption to, if that's possible. I don't even know.
Right.
Or just like anyone else, really, to be honest. Like, it's not like we have Tiger and Phil coming and playing at the tournament. You know what I mean? Like, John Daly, right, obviously was really good in his prime, but he's not what he used to be at this point. And yeah, it shows with being one of two groups over par.
And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, you're right. It's like, oh, cool, it's John Daly. I'd kind of like to see him go. Maybe not when he's 56, you know. And like the, yeah, and I know it's a pro-am thing. Like on Thursday, they had celebrities out there, et cetera, and this is just for the actual tournament. But why not leave the John Daly, David Duval group with the celebrities, right? Like, yeah, they're not going to compete. And it was clear the 14 over. The winner was 30 under. Like, they weren't, yeah, even going to come close to making the cut.
44, you know, shot difference between them and the winners.
Yeah, it's not that, like, I feel like it's a slap in the face by any means, but it almost feels like it's more of a, we're not taking this seriously, this is kind of a joke situation. I mean, these FedEx Cup points are serious, right? Yeah. Like, these guys are competing for these points. You know, why not make the sponsorship exemption somebody who is also going to compete for these points, right? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So do you think this is an example of how the PGA Tour really needs to start looking at this schedule and tighten it up a little bit?
Yes and no, because the other thing that we have to look at is the fact that this field wasn't that great to begin with. Like, our biggest team was Xander Schauffele and Patrick Cantlay, who got T4, which we expected them to be around there. But what's our next biggest group after that? I mean, Billy Horschel, Sam Burns got T11. I mean, that's probably the next biggest one, to be honest, because then we got Harris English, Tom Hoagie, two names that, like, guys like us will know, but most people don't know. Matt Fitzpatrick and his brother, I think, right? That's who he was with?
Yeah, the Fitzpatrick brothers, and that was T19. They're almost out of the top 20.
And that's
20.
Just because of Matt Fitzpatrick. So there's only, like, three notable groups in this whole tournament anyway, so I don't know if we can necessarily look at it like that. It definitely would have been nice to have a little bit better groupings and competition, but
right, and you know, I just think that this tournament could be like kind of just so much cooler. Like, you could really throw caution to the wind. There doesn't need to be a structure in this tournament. One of the things I love about this tournament is it's usually, like, for example, Matt Fitzpatrick play with his brother. You have like a team of two Argentinians and Fabian Gomez, who is a name that we'll know, but this Augusto Nunez guy, I've never heard his name before, and they made the cut and they were playing on Sunday, you know. And Eric Van Rooyen, we know his name, we know he's South African. MJ Defoe, never heard his name before, but there he is playing on Sunday. Like, two countrymen playing together. That's the kind of stuff that's super cool. For example, Thorbjørn Olesen and Nikolai Højgaard. Hell yeah. Let's go with the
yeah, we talked about those
they,
names last
are they
week.
Norwegian?
The
what
best
are
names. I believe oh, they yeah. were. They were oh, that God. Was the best names in the field. We talked about that last week.
100%. 100%. Yeah, those have to be the two coolest names I've heard as a team before, you know. But I was doing some reading about the event, and a good question was posed to the writers here. Let me see if I can find that again. Come on, Brian, you're looking at the article, and I'll find the damn thing. Like, what tweaks would you make to the event, either with how the teams are picked or the formats are played here? And we have some solid answers here. I'd like to read them here. Since it's a team event and it's not the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup, and honestly, if we are inviting aging sponsors exemptions, we might as well embrace the weirdness and go all out. Four ball is boring. Let's go 4 days, four formats. Make one day a scramble, but if you go three holes without a birdie, you're eliminated. Make the next day a worse ball scramble. Round three, you get only four clubs. Then for the final round, alternate shot. Wait a few years, and this is the formula for the fifth major. I mean, I'm not going to lie. That would be maybe the most exciting golf I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. If they took PGA Tour professionals and they were like, hey, it's day three of the tournament. You guys are probably in the thick of things. Your leaders are getting excited. They might win this tournament. You now all you get is four clubs. Choose wisely. You had to choose driver and putter. So what's the other two going to be? Have fun. You know, like that's the kind of stuff where maybe you might get the bigger names to partake in it because of the weirdness.
What would your two clubs be?
Oh, yeah. So obviously I'm going to go driver putter. My two clubs would probably be, probably like an approach wedge and a 7-iron. I feel like I can get around with those because the approach wedge gives you at least a little bit of distance on the wedge, while also having some control when you're close. And I feel like the 7-iron I can hit with enough efficiency where I'm not like spraying a 5-iron all over the place just for the distance. I'm actually getting it to where it needs to go. I'll probably go 7 and approach. What about you? What are you feeling?
I actually don't think I'm bringing my driver at all. I think I'm going to go.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, I think I have to go 6-iron, 8-iron, approach wedge, and putter. I think that would be my four.
Now, what's good about that is because we're keeping it a team event, you get four clubs, I get four clubs. If you're the steady, I'm going to par or birdie every hole, I can get weird and go for eagles and shit, you know? So, like, that's the kind of stuff that you also have to think about. This is the kind of stuff that they really, like, the PGA Tour needs to read what people write, man. Some of these ideas are solid, okay?
This one coming from someone who goes on Reddit and reads stuff.
Yeah, this one coming from Josh Burhau, who is a managing editor at golf.com. Josh, fantastic ideas, my friend. I like what you're writing here. this is the kind of stuff that will be cool, man. This is these ideas that need the PGA Tour needs to listen to. Not to, you know, obviously the whole live golf thing is not even a competition situation, but to have brand new ideas, to have people thinking about watching golf more, these are the kind of things that will help that situation, I'm sure. But that was the Zurich Classic. Cool event. Could be cooler. A little bit disrespectful that the sponsorship exemptions were in their 50s, but it is what it is. But, Rick, there's obviously some major news we need to address. The elephant in the room, as it were, or should I say the feline in the room, as Tiger Woods tweeted out on Wednesday, the day after the podcast dropped, obviously, because that's how it was going to happen.
I like that you went with the feline in the room, because I think I would have gone with the elephant in the room. I think that would have been my approach to it. I'm just thinking out loud here.
I don't like want to make a joke about the poor man's surgery at this point.
It sounds like it's only good things though. Like it doesn't sound. Doesn't sound incredibly debilitating.
Sorry. So the day after the podcast drops, obviously, as it always occurs, Tiger Woods tweets out from his official Twitter. Earlier today, Tiger underwent a subtalar fusion procedure to address his post-traumatic arthritis from his previous talus fracture. It was performed by Dr. Martin O'Malley at HSS Sports Medicine Institute in New York City. He has determined the surgery to be successful. Tiger is currently recovering and looks forward to beginning his rehabilitation. So everybody's panicking, right? Twitter's losing their damn minds. Everybody's like, it's over. Tiger's got to retire now. This is going to be a second fusion. Everybody pump the brakes, okay? Everybody calm down, okay? So the thing about a subtalar fusion, and I did a little bit of research here, folks. That's right. Got a little bit of medical on you. The thing about a subtalar fusion is it's not technically a fusion. It's a lot different than his back fusion, that's for sure. So the back fusion is like clearly fusing two things together to where they form as one. Now, this is technically like that. However, there is no actual fusing action. It is letting the bones grow together to form one instead of fusing them together. So it happens more naturally. So with the subtalar fusion procedure here is basically the issue he was having was the up and down motion of the foot, right? So there's the top of the ankle and the bottom of the ankle, which is the subtalar bone. So the up and down motion of the foot was fine for him. It was that side to side where he was experiencing a lot of arthritic pain where he just, I think he had like no cartilage whatsoever. It was just bone on bone and it was super painful. I being someone who has had arthritis issues in joints and having no cartilage, it hurts. It's not fun. I'm not going to lie to you. And so with that kind of side to side movement, you can kind of think back on a lot of the times where you saw him limping or you saw him struggling and where, and think about the terrain really made it hard if you have issues with your foot moving side to side. In his sand shots, it looked like he almost broke something every time he swung from the sand. At the Masters is a great example because there's no flat lie at the Masters at all. Right. Yeah. So your foot's always going to be under tension. You're going to need to move it from side to side. So he gets this procedure, right? And now everybody's like, oh, this is the end of Tiger. This is his second type of surgery like this that's invasive. Here's why I think we should remain optimistic, right? So what happened with the back surgery, right? Obviously, it took him some time to get used to it. He didn't have as much power as he used to, yada, yada, yada. He then became accustomed to the fusion. He fixed his swing up a little bit. He realized he wasn't going to be hitting it as far, so he changed his game a little bit. What'd he do? Wins. 2019 Masters win, a major. Won two more times after that, before his unfortunate accident. So what we know now is that obviously these surgeries are going to hinder his ability to move in certain ways. Sure, yes. However, it's pain management, and obviously he can come back from a major surgery that hinders movement due to pain management. If he doesn't have pain, he's going to be fine, right? Like, are you red light is flashing panicking, or are you looking at this positively?
My only concern is how long until he can resume normal golfing activities, because like you said, they're not physically fusing the bones together. They're like welding the bones together. They're just using pins and needles basically to hold them together so that eventually they grow into each other. So are you able to play and do stuff while they're in the process of doing that? Because that's not going to be a short process by any means, you know what I mean? So that's my only concern there. If he's able to continue to do normal golf activities, then I don't see an issue with it. I feel like it's just going to be discomfort until they eventually fuse together. But I mean, the only thing that, like, the issue with fusion stuff is usually flexibility, which he's not really going to need in that part of his foot as much as like his back per se. Like, obviously your back needs a lot more flexibility in golf. But so that part doesn't concern me. It's just, when can he resume normal golfing activities?
Yeah, and it says here that he's only non-weight-bearing for 6 weeks. After that, he's in a boot or cast for 8 to 12. So once he's in the boot, I'm sure he could start doing something, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume he can start figuring out his swing after the 8 to 12 weeks. So I guess that puts him around, what, 20 weeks?
And then also, let's not forget, he is a enigma of a human. He's a professional athlete, not just a professional athlete, but an elite athlete, right? These elite athletes do not heal like us mere mortal regular human beings, right? Bryce Harper's about to come back in 2 weeks from Tommy John surgery that he had less than 6 months ago. Okay. These people are freaks of nature. And it's just something completely different. It's a different mindset. It's a different rehab ability. It's a different ability to heal than we regular humans have. He's going to come back and play golf again, folks. Like, there's no doubt in my mind. And now I'm actually starting to think, look, if he's standing over that ball and one of his swing thoughts doesn't have to be how bad is this going to hurt anymore? We saw what happened when it happened with the back. Yeah, it took him a couple years to figure it out, but then he won the 2019 Masters against all odds because he got used to the swing that he had to make and he was no longer thinking about pain anymore, you know?
Yeah. The other thing, too, I think is good is he obviously was still suffering from fatigue as far as his leg was concerned from the accident. So what this is going to do is he's going to have to go through the rehab of walking and everything again. So he'll have 14 to 18 weeks, I guess, off of it. And then he'll begin another rehab program where he'll be learning to walk with whatever he's got going on in there now. So that extra time off, I think, will be definitely helpful for him. But like I said, 16 to 18 weeks or 14 to 18 weeks, that's a long time. Like, yeah. I don't think we see him until the Masters next year.
And I would be inclined to agree with you. I also think that would almost be a very poetic return again if he just was like, and I'm back at the Masters. You know, that makes sense to me. If not, if he's able to do the Zozo, he probably will because that's like his host event. Yeah. I'd be inclined to agree with you. It's probably going to be a calendar year before we see him golf again. But yeah, I mean, he's going to basically get a second rehab on that leg, right? So, like, the more rehabs that he gets on that leg in its entirety, I'm assuming the stronger it's going to be, right? You know?
Yeah, you think.
So, I think you're completely right. Having a second rehab on that leg, probably not the worst thing, you know? And then having the painless swing is going to be great. Is it probably going to change the way he swings a golf club? Probably. Right?
Probably a little bit. I don't know if it's going to be significant enough to change that much, but.
Right. And then the same thing happened with the back, though. You know, like.
Yeah.
We've seen this before. This rodeo has happened, you know.
To a much more aggressive extent. Like we said, like the back is way harder to deal with than a small part of the foot. So.
100%. 100%. So. Honestly, I have a optimistic approach to this surgery. I'm not as doom and gloom as some golf fans seem to be about this. So I think, folks, we should be looking at this as a chance to see Tiger again. You know, we should be looking at this to see a pain-free Tiger, which I think we haven't seen since that accident. So I'm interested to see if that's the case, and I actually am optimistic about this surgery. All righty, to keep moving forward here, we got two more things to cover before we talk about the Mexico Open. This one's fun. Talk about this one. So I'll read just the bits here on SportsIllustrated.com. I think they just wrote it better than I'll be able to speak it. The PGA Tour versus LIV golf drama has inspired a slew of content since its onset. Articles, podcasts, even books are being written about the Saudi-backed breakaway tour and its disruption of the professional golf landscape. Now, the controversy seems to have sparked an idea in yet another medium. According to Deadline Report, Will Ferrell will star in a new golf comedy series about, quote, a professional golfer who becomes the face of a controversial new league competing with the PGA, unquote. Now, Rick.
I was convinced this was fake.
I also thought this was fake. The only thing is, like, now it's ESPN, Sports Illustrated talking about it, and they don't usually like to mess up. Yeah. So I'm starting to think this is very real, which is very funny because this really seems like a let's make fun of Greg Norman and Phil Mickelson thing, and I am on board with this.
It's so funny. If this actually happens, especially with Will Ferrell, because I saw that it was going to be like it was the structure of it, I guess, was supposed to be almost like that of Talladega Nights.
Uh-huh.
Which, if that's the case, this is going to be a rock star of a movie.
Yeah, I'm going to love it. So it says here, the TV package is a collaboration between Farrell and Jessica Eelbaum, Gloria Sanchez Productions, and Ryan Johnson and Ram Bergman's T Street. So it looks like there's already production companies attached to it, which is steps in the right direction, right? Like, if there's already production companies attached to the idea, it's probably in the works. So I don't know, man. This is good stuff. This just really sounds like it could be something hilarious for golf fans. Yeah. Which I'm super excited about, because I'm not quite sure, other than obviously like Happy Gilmore, I'm not quite sure how many golf comedies there are. You know what I'm saying? Like, at its core.
Caddyshack,
obviously, right? But like,
that's a big one.
But imagine like just a TV series of just mocking what's going on in the current golf landscape. It's gonna be so funny. Also, yeah, I love excited. Will Ferrell, so that's helpful.
I think the only thing that might work against it is the fact that some people feel very strongly in the other direction about Will Ferrell.
But
I think it's more people who like Will Ferrell than don't like him at this point. So,
yeah, I mean, the issue here is that some people don't like that type of comedy, which was funny to me, because Happy Gilmore to me is, and Adam Sandler is, very Will Ferrell like comedy.
Yeah.
You know, they were on Saturday Night Live at Saturday Night Live at like the same era. So their comedies are very similar. So if you love Happy Gilmore, this is probably going to be right up your alley. So
yeah,
I think it's going to be hilarious.
Is that all they've announced so far as cast and stuff is concerned?
That's about it. They've only released that little snippet of a description and Will Ferrell being a part of it. So there,
John
the
C.
subject
Reilly better be a part of it.
He better be a part of it, right?
Because that would be amazing.
You have to get those two back together, right?
Yeah.
Especially if
you're going to make this kind of movie, I feel like you have to.
It's almost a must. Like, I feel like it's guaranteed that has to happen. So that's something to keep a lookout for, folks, because I don't know when that's going to start production or get like official trailer type of stuff, but that's something to keep an eye out for. That'll
for
be funny.
Sure.
One more bit of bizarre news here. I'm gonna read some paragraphs here from a story on golf.com. This is completely bizarre. So there was a shuttle situation at the Korn Ferry Tour's Leecom Suncoast Classic that ended up penalizing six players and might have even caused some very significant ramifications for one pro. So here's what happened. Two threesomes, Mason Anderson, Wilson Furr, and Alejandro Tosti, and later Ashton Van Horn, Boo Weekly, and Jared Wolf, were penalized in separate occasions for taking unauthorized shuttle rides from a green to a tee box on Friday at Lakewood National Golf Club in Lakewood Ranch, Florida. The incidents occurred on two different routes, from 9 green to 10 tee box, and from 18 green to 1 tee box. So one infraction per group here.
Yeah.
So the penalties, which are in Model Local Rule G6, which were first reported by Monday Q Info's Ryan French, seem to stem from a combination of oversight and bad luck. Players receive tournament-specific rule sheets for every event, which would lay out things where transportation is and not allowed. According to French, this week's event didn't have a locker room, so it wasn't posted there, but it was still available in the player dining and online via player portals. For this week, the only authorized shuttle was from the 7 green to the 8 tee, as well as shuttles from the range to the starting tees. But here's where the confusion begins. So Tosti, one of the players in one of the groups, told Golf Channel that he was the first to walk off the 18th green and noticed a volunteer sitting in the same shuttle they rode in earlier to the 10th tee. The Korn Ferry Tour told French the cart was there because it had stopped while the players putted. He said, quote, "I asked the guy, are you giving rides to the first tee? And he said, yeah, jump in." And he knew that he couldn't change anything after the the organizers came to him, but it was just really bad luck. And so what basically happened was there was only supposed to be one drive in a cart from tee to green. And these guys took it at the wrong holes because they saw a cart, asked the volunteer, are you giving rides? And the volunteers were like, yeah, come on in, because the volunteers didn't know any better.
Yeah.
What really sucks here, out of the six players penalized, two had missed the cut anyway. Toasty dropped from 10 under to 8 under, and Wolf went from 9 to 7 under. Weekly and Fur both went from 6 under to 4 under, and without the penalty, would have made the cut on the number and advanced to the weekend. Instead, they missed the cut two shots and were sent home. But Fur pays the biggest price because, as it was, the 24-year-old pro had made 3 of 7 cuts coming into the week and was 148th in points. This was his 8th and final start due to where he finished in the stage of Q school. Now, after this 8th event, the standings will be reshuffled, and due to his missed cut, he's not likely to get any more starts this season unless he gets a sponsorship exemption, which means because of this error, he drops out of enough places to be considered a professional under the Q school and on the Korn Ferry Tour, and drops out and has to requalify for that tour. That's terrible that they're letting it happen that way, that they can't understand that these mistakes do happen.
Yeah,
and make an exemption here, right?
It's not that big of a deal. Right. It's not like they moved their ball on the course. Like, they took a shuttle.
Yeah, we're letting Patrick Reed get away with basically golf war crimes.
Yeah.
Unaddressed. And this poor kid...
On the PGA Tour.
On the PGA Tour. And this poor kid is going to have to go through the entire process of re-qualifying for the Korn Ferry Tour because of a two-stroke penalty, because somebody gave him a ride to a tee box. Are you kidding? Like, this is really ugly stuff from the Korn Ferry Tour.
That's not on the golfer. Like, it is on the golfer to an extent, but at the same time, it's also on the Korn Ferry Tour, because you should be telling your volunteers, look, you don't give people rides unless it's from this hole to this hole. It's not that hard.
It really isn't, and it's also not that hard to look at the situation, hear everything being told to you from the volunteers and the players, and be like, oh, all right, accidents happen. That's fine. We're not going to dock you, because obviously it was different. There was no locker room where you could read these certain rules, and like, you didn't know that you could see it on the portal, et cetera, et cetera. This is a one-off, though. If you mess this up again, we will dock you those two strokes.
Yep.
But for this exact moment here, we completely understand. They couldn't do that. That's not all that hard.
They still haven't,
which is terrible. And I hope that they remedy this situation, because this is kind of a very dark smudge on what is basically the minor leagues for professional golf. You know, you want to promote the best golfers coming into the PGA Tour, you know?
Yeah.
Excuse me. You don't want to have these two-stroke stupid penalties based off human error being what determines who gets to battle for a PGA Tour card. You know, it's just so dumb.
And you don't want to say that it's upsetting because of the implications it had on them being considered a pro, but that's honestly what it is. If they weren't going to make the cut anyway, and there was going to be nothing, like no problems, then yeah, whatever. But when it's going to affect someone as much as it's about to affect this person because of a small, like you said, misunderstanding, it's something that, like, that's one of those things where you just say, you know what? Rules are meant to be broken. Don't let it happen again.
Right. And like, if they were just honest and they were like, all right, fine. You know, like, it happens. The volunteers didn't know any better, you know, and the players didn't seem to know. They were just earnestly asking, like, hey, are we supposed to get into this cart that is directly off the green here? Like at one of the other holes back there. Clearly nobody knew what was going on. So why can't they just amend the error and, you know, have it be like, oh, okay, this happens. It is what it is. Right. It's so dumb to me how some of these things happen. And it is what it is. But I hope they go back and they take it for what it is, and they they take a good look at it and they understand that we're going to fix this, right? We're not going to have it be, we're not going to have your entire professional golf career be altered based off of this one error. That would be horrendous. All right, to keep moving forward here, we're going to talk about the Mexico Open at Vidanta. This is kind of one of those smaller events par usual here at this point in the season. I'm looking for the power rankings. Cannot find them.
What?
Is our boy, Rob Bolton, slacking?
This is the most important tournament of the year.
Yeah, this is a deciding tournament, people. I don't know what you're doing. Shoot, I can't seem to find it. Do you have it? Okay.
I got it. Roles reversed. I guess
the roles have reversed for today, folks.
Here we go. 5-1, no specific order. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Wyndham Clark, Tony Finau, John Rahm, Ben Martin, Patrick Rogers.
Okay. I'm going to go from 5-1. Ben Martin, Wyndham Clark, Patrick Rogers, Tony Finau, John Rahm.
I'm so glad that you got that wrong, because that would have just made me look like the worst.
Yeah, good shooting, man.
With how long it took me to get one of them right. Again, well, let's be honest. This is one of the easier power rankings we've gone through.
Sure. Very easy. Yeah.
John Rahm and Tony Finau are going to be one and two, but let's go through it. Ben Martin, number 5. You switched Patrick Rogers and Wyndham Clark, by the way. Ben Martin, his resurgent season has required all clubs on deck, but the success has been spearheaded by terrific ball striking and above average likelihood of connecting chances into par breakers. 4 top 15s in his last 7 individual starts include a T8 on Paspalum at Corrales.
Okay. That's a sneaky stat line there.
Yeah, I mean, flying under the radar, faux show.
What was Martin,
Ben,
right?
Martin.
Ben Martin?
Yes.
I'm trying to find him in the... Wow, look at that, top 70 for you old Benny Martz.
In the FedEx Cup?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Let's check it out with that. All right.
All right, here we go. Number 4, Patrick Rogers.
Patty Raj.
He's putting together arguably his best season, and he's angling in sharply after solo 5th at TPC San Antonio and a T19 at Harbortown. Still a non-winner on tour, and he's always ebbed and flowed. Solo 10th here last year during a similar crest of a wave. Whatever that
I gotta tell you. So some of the way that Rob can wordsmith for these guys that nobody knows about, it is impressive.
Yeah,
it is impressive. For all the shit that we give Rob Bolton, being able to just pull anything out of his ass when it comes to these guys, it is impressive.
Yes, it is. Number 3, Wyndham Clark.
Now that's a name I've heard.
With Nick Hardy and Davis Riley having broken through, and with his red-hot form upon arrival for his second start at Vidanta, Clark has rapidly risen to a spot near the top of the best without a PGA Tour victory. His irons are vastly improved, so he checks all of the boxes. That's the only box, I guess, that needs to be checked, is irons.
Yeah, well, look, iron play can win you tournaments if it's the right tournament. He's also 40th in FedEx Cup points, so... he's right in the mix there in the top 50. That's a good place to be for Wyndham there. So did it say what he did he play this event last year? Does it say?
It didn't say.
Okay, interesting. This might just be a flyer pick
power
for
rankings, though. It's like,
yeah, is it tough?
it's tough. I'll read them out to you then in a minute. Tony Finau, number 2. We have. It was a final round 63 here last year that not only lifted him into a share of second place, but it served as a harbinger for what would be a fruitful summer and extended trajectory through today. Led the field in GIR, strokes gained, tee to green, and par 4 scoring. Second in proximity.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Tony Finau is always a good pick. I love picking Tony Finau for events like this that don't have a lot of names attached to it. Just because... it's so much fun. Here's the only problem is last year's winner and number 1 here in these power rankings exists.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. So we do have John Rahm at number one. Obviously, he's going to be here. There's no reason for him not to be. Although the space is reserved for supportive evidence, the only surprise would be if there's something to the contrary. The defending champ leads the tour in adjusted scoring and the FedEx Cup. Also first in par three scoring, T3 in par four scoring, and second in par five scoring. I mean, it's hard to even think that. Like, he would have to have a bad week, it seems like, to even
like a real bad week,
have a chance. So I'm going to read off to you 6 through 15 just because it'll give people a little bit of insight as to why Ben Martin is number 5 on this list, even with all the good things that were said about him. So number right. 6, we have Nikolaj Højgaard of Denmark.
All right.
They're Denmark. Yeah. They're not.
Denmarkians. There you go.
Denmarkians. We have Ben Bjeng. An, I hope I said that right. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Bo Hostler, Matt Wallace.
I know that guy. I know that guy.
Emiliano Grillo. I definitely said that wrong, but that's
we
fine.
Know him.
Brandon Wu, Andrew Putnam, David Lipsky, Gary Woodland, and Ches Reavy to round
out. Oh God, if Gary Woodland's in the top 15, that's a brutal tournament.
Yeah, so not great. If you're in a league like Brian is and you haven't picked Tony Finau and John Rahm, this is your week.
Now's
there is
the time.
There is not a better week for you to pick John Rahm and Tony Finau because I can almost guarantee you they're going to be one and two.
Yeah, now is the time. Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because that's a little fun way to wrap up the episode here. There was a little bit of drama last week in our fantasy golf chat here. So due to, you know, certain circumstances, the people handling the league has changed a little bit here. It's been kind of shaken up a smidge. Going into this week, I'm in second place in this 15 person league here. Clearly I know a thing or two. But somebody did a full blown audit of the league because apparently some people have picked people more than once, which you're not supposed to do before the PGA Championship. You can after the fact, but not before it. Unfortunately, I was one of those people,
and
I committed the crime twice.
And no one told you?
Look, I no one told me. I was pretty bad at keeping track of who I picked, so I was pretty much sending flyers all over the place. So apparently, I had picked Max Homa and Rory McIlroy twice. Here's as the email reads: our engagement team, hilarious. Has completed its extremely legal investigation into the allegations surrounding cheating in this league. We've compiled a list of the cheaters for public ridicule. Please note, person's name I'm going to redact one time did Marikawa. Person's name I'm going to redact one time with Homa. Person's name I'm going to redact did it with Homa and Morikawa. Brian, twice, Homa, McIlroy. Here are the updated standings. When I tell you I have not left second place, it don't fucking matter. I'm that good. Clearly the second time I picked Max Homa and Rory McIlroy, they didn't get me points. They missed cuts, clearly, because my points didn't change at all, which is funny. I am $4 million in earnings off the lead. So I'm right there. I'm right there. I so far have
good win.
One good win. I am at 10.5 million earnings in total. Okay. Our friend Colin Faraday from Hack Across America is at 7.3 million total earnings.
Is he one of the aforementioned names that were?
No, he was not. If he was, I would have read it out loud. If he was, he is not. Apparently, he's better at keeping track than I am. But now we have a attached to the Excel spreadsheet that my friend Carter from work did a really good job on. There's now a tab called Law and Order, which now lists off who you've picked so that I have a good list to refer to.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that should have been whoever's in charge of the league keeping track.
Right, but,
that.
You know, due to circumstances that has changed hands, et cetera.
Well,
et cetera,
yeah, I get that, yeah, but I feel like that should have been built in kind of.
It should have been. And my buddy Carter said as much. He was like, look, the guys running the league, they just don't do it like I did. It's, you know, they just don't know what they're doing. Carter's a commissioner of many leagues. He knows what he's doing. He's been around the block here. But second place.
Any fantasy football leagues? Because I'm looking for more.
He is. I might gotta throw you in the loop there. I gotta throw you in the loop. Yeah, so that's a little a fun update to the fantasy golf thing. But unless you have any other golf news, Rick, that's gonna do it.
I have nothing.
All righty, folks. As always, thank you so much for listening. Whoa!
Wait.
Okay.
We golfed
I'm
on
waiting.
Friday.
We did. We golfed on Friday. After work, we just played a quick nine on Friday. It was super great. Rick and I have, surprisingly, we have not golfed together in quite some time. So it was really cool to get back out again together. I got to say, if you have the chance, people, on a Friday after work to play a quick nine, just do it. It is so nice. It was very relaxing. It helped us kind of unwind and get ready for the weekend, which was super cool. We actually didn't keep score at all. Which was really nice. It kind of like we were just kind of there to make good swings, to hit some good golf shots and feel good about our game, which I think we both hit very good golf shots during the day. We hit some bad ones, obviously, but we had our good shots. We were surprisingly putting very well, which was shocking for me. Rick's a pretty good putter usually, so that's not totally surprising for him, but for me, it was quite surprising. And not keeping score is something that I think a lot more people, especially us amateurs, who seem to obsess about our scores, I think it's something that is quite relaxing to do. I enjoyed it. You know?
If I'm not mistaken, this is the first time in a while you've done that, right?
Yeah, first time in a very long time I have not kept score.
I do it frequently. Like you said, it's relaxing, it's freeing. It helps you enjoy the sport a little bit more. If you're out and there's no money on the line, like you're just out there to have a good time, I'm a huge advocate for just not keeping a score. Because in my opinion, and I noticed this when we were out on Friday, I can get just as much of a feel for how my golf game is doing based on how many putts it takes me to get the ball in the hole and how I'm playing around the green. Like, because unless you're going to the range 4 or 5 times a week, your clubs aren't going to be dialed in. You know what I mean? It's going to take you a little bit to warm up. And if you're scrambling good, at least around the greens and putting, I mean, that's really what you need. You know what I mean? So if you're not out there trying to play for money, if you're not trying to play for even bragging rights, just try it sometime. If you haven't tried it ever before, or if you're looking for just a nice relaxing day, just give it a shot. I'm a huge advocate for it. Like I said, this was your first time in a while and you seemed to have a great time. So
I did, man.
I don't see a problem with it. But yeah.
So. Not only that, but like I feel like you're right. You can still have a feel for how well you're playing. Like I felt pretty good with the way that I was playing. So it allowed me to have even more fun because obviously not keeping score, you don't have that number attached to you all day long. If you're hitting good golf shots and you're feeling good about the swings you're taking, that adds a little bit of extra fun because by hole 7, I was trying to hit a draw around a corner, which wasn't going to happen. I don't know what I'm doing. I shanked it immediately into the trees to the right, but I really didn't care because I was playing well that day. I had some good golf shots. I was putting well. So really I was just trying to have fun. You know, I was taking a tiger line over the trees that I clearly wasn't gonna make.
And you make a good point. It's a great way to experiment. And like obviously golf isn't extremely cheap. You're probably paying at least $50 a round. So maybe not every time, but it's a fantastic way to experiment and see, like you said, can I hit a draw? I've looked at a million YouTube videos on how to hit a draw. I've read multiple articles on how to hit a draw. If I do all of that stuff right now, am I physically capable of that? Or do I have to go back to the lab and hit the range for 12 sessions trying to learn how to hit a draw again? It's a good time to do that because then you hit, like you said, you shank one into the right. You're like, oh, well, I guess I'll just hit the range. You know what
not
I mean?
Not
like
do that again.
Not affecting my score because I'm not keeping it. So I guess I'll just not do that again, and I'll go figure it out another time.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, I'm sure on that hole I probably got like a 7 or an 8, but I really didn't care that much. You know,
and you have no idea. You're really not thinking about it.
Yeah, because when you don't have this number following you around, it's a lot easier to just kind of let the bad holes roll off your back and just move forward to the hole that you're going to, you know? So definitely something that people should try more often. It was something that I greatly enjoyed.
Oh yeah.
All righty. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of From the Tips. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please, again, go ahead and check out shankitgolf.com. They got a bunch of cool stuff there that you're going to like. Polos, hats, t-shirts, hoodies, ball markers, stickers, you name it, they have it. It's a lot of cool stuff that you guys have probably already seen. And use code FTT15 at checkout to get 15% off your order. Not only are you saving money, but it helps us gain some commission for the podcast to be able to bring you guys some better content. And yes, thank you for listening, as always. And we out!
Thanks, guys. See you later.